Welcome to Breaking News to Trading Moves. We're looking at a very specific window of time in the market, that shortened trading session right after the Thanksgiving holiday.
Right, the Black Friday session. And if you were just, you know, glancing at the major indexes, you might have thought not much happened.
Exactly. The S&P 500 just ticked up a tiny bit, looked very stable, very calm.
But that surface view was, well, it was misleading. Beneath that, you had some really powerful currents moving capital around very quickly.
And it felt like two big stories were really driving everything. On one side, you had the winners led by just a huge surge in Intel. That's ticker INTC.
And that was based entirely on speculation.
Pure speculation.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, the losers, you had these established high flyers like Eli Lilly, ticker LLY, and some of the big AI names. They were finally taking a bit of a breather.
It was a classic rotation. Capital was moving out of proven winners and into a story of future potential.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot in these shorter, sometimes lower liquidity sessions.
So our goal here is to really get into the specifics for you, to look at what forces were actually pushing and pulling these stocks. We're going to focus just on the headline movements and see who came out on top and who didn't.
It's all about the mechanics of the day. Why did the money move where it did?
Let's start with where that money went first. The winners. This part is all about validation and rotation.
And we have to start with the biggest story of the day. It has to be Intel.
Intel, INTC. The move was, what, over 10% in a single shortened day? For a company of that size, that's just a wild move.
It is. A move like that on no confirmed news tells you the market is desperate to believe in the story. And the story, the rumor, was that Intel could potentially start making Mac chips for Apple, ticker AAPL.
Now, this is a big deal because of the history there, right? Apple famously moved away from Intel chips to their own custom silicon a few years ago.
Exactly. It was seen as a major blow to Intel's prestige and, you know, their technological leadership at the time. So the idea of Apple coming back, even in a limited capacity, is more than just a potential contract.
So what is it then? What's the bigger picture the market is seeing?
It's about validation. It's about Intel's huge multi-billion dollar bet on its foundry business. They call it IFS, Intel Foundry Services.
This is their plan to make chips for other companies, not just for themselves, to compete with the giants like TSMC.
Precisely. And for years, the big question has been, can they actually do it? Can their technology catch up to the cutting edge? A rumor involving Apple, a company that demands the absolute best, is the ultimate yes to that question.
So even the possibility of a deal is enough to signal to the market that Intel's turnaround plan is working.
That's it. It suggests their manufacturing process, their technology roadmap, is finally getting back on track. And that narrative is powerful. It's powerful enough to drive a 10% jump in the stock price.
There's also a geopolitical angle to this, isn't there? With things like the CHIPS Act trying to bring manufacturing back to the U.S.
Absolutely. That's a layer you can't ignore. A core part of Intel's strategy and U.S. industrial policy is to create a robust onshore supply chain for advanced semiconductors.
To reduce dependency on overseas manufacturing.
Right. So if Apple, the iconic American tech company, were to use Intel's domestic foundries, it's a huge symbolic win. It's not just a business deal. It's a signal that the national strategy is bearing fruit. The market prices that in, too. It adds a whole other dimension to the stock's appeal.
Okay, let's flip it around. Let's look at App ticker AAPL. Their own M-series chips have been incredibly successful. Why would they even think about going back to Intel for anything?
It comes down to one thing. Supply chain management. It's about risk.
How so?
Well, right now, Apple relies very, very heavily on one single manufacturer for its most advanced chips. And that works great until it doesn't.
You mean geopolitical risk or just, you know, a factory having a problem?
All of the above. Geopolitical tensions, natural disasters, capacity shortages, pricing pressure. Having all your eggs in one basket is a massive risk for a company the size of Apple.
So bringing Intel on board, even for a portion of their chips, would be a diversification play, a backup plan.
It's a fantastic backup plan. And more than that, it gives them negotiating leverage. Having a second viable high-end supplier, especially one located domestically, is a huge strategic advantage. The market sees that as a clear positive. It improves Apple's long-term resilience.
So this news created different ways for traders to react, depending on how much risk they wanted to take on.
Yeah, we saw two very clear paths emerge. The first was the high volatility direct approach.
Which was just to go long Intel.
Exactly. Bet directly on the rumor. You saw the 10% pop, and if you believe confirmation is coming, You buy in hoping for the next leg up. But it's high risk. If the rumor gets denied tomorrow, that stock could give all those gains back and then some.
Okay, so what was the lower risk way to play this theme?
You'd use Apple, AAAPL, as a proxy. For Apple, this potential deal is a positive, but it's not going to fundamentally change their entire business model overnight the way it would for Intel.
It's an incremental positive, not a transformational one.
Correct. So by going long Apple, you can express a positive view on the partnership, on that supply chain stability theme, without taking on the massive headline risk tied directly to Intel. You're participating in the idea, but with much less volatility.
A clear example of a potential future event driving immediate capital flows.
Okay, let's move on. There was another winner that day for a completely different reason. It was much more mechanical.
Yes, let's talk about the power of index inclusion. This is a classic market phenomenon.
You're talking about SanDisk, ticker SNDK. They saw gains because they were being added to the S&P 500.
That's right. No new product, no earnings beat, just a structural change in the market.
Can you explain for our listener why that triggers such an immediate, almost guaranteed buying pressure?
Sure. It's what's often called forced buying. You have to think about the trillions of dollars in passive investment funds, ETFs, mutual funds, whose entire job is to perfectly mirror an index like the S&P 500.
They don't make active choices. They just have to own what's in the index. Exactly. So when the committee announces that SanDisk is being added, every single one of those funds, by mandate, must go out and buy shares of SanDisk. They have to own it in the correct proportion to match the new index composition.
And this buying all happens in a pretty short window of time, before the official inclusion date.
That's the key. You have this massive, non-discretionary demand for the stock hitting the market all at once. It creates a temporary supply and demand imbalance, and that pushes the price up. It's pure mechanics, totally separate from the company's day-to-day business performance.
But did this mechanical move also shine a light on the broader sector?
It did. Even though the buying was forced, it put a big spotlight on the memory and storage industry. There's a prevailing view in the market right now that we're in a memory upcycle.
Driven by the huge data demands of AI.
Exactly. All the data centers being built, all the models being trained. It requires immense amounts of memory and storage. So SanDisk's inclusion served as a sort of confirmation, reminding everyone of the positive trends in that sector.
And when that happens, it doesn't just help the one company, it lifts the peers as well. Specifically, Western Digital, ticker WDC.
Right. Western Digital, WDC, is another major player, especially in the data center storage, that's so crucial for AI infrastructure. So when SanDisk gets this kind of attention and validation, it creates a halo effect.
Investors look at SanDisk and think, okay, the memory sector is strong, and then they look for other ways to get exposure.
And Western Digital is a prime candidate. The logic is that the same positive forces, the AI build-out, the demand for storage that are helping SanDisk, are also helping Western Digital. So the good news for one tends to lift the sentiment for the other.
Okay, so we've covered a strategic rumor and a structural index change. Now let's look at a couple of names that moved on pure macro factors.
Yeah, these were high beta plays, meaning they're very sensitive to moves in their underlying commodity or asset class.
Let's start with energy and a natural gas producer, EQT. Ticker EQT. What was the simple driver here?
It really was simple. The weather. Colder weather forecasts started coming in, and the market immediately priced in higher demand for heating.
More demand for natural gas.
Right. And that expectation pushes up the price of the natural gas commodity itself. For a producer like EQT, their stock price is leveraged to that commodity price.
So a small move in the price of gas can lead to a much bigger percentage move in the stock.
That's it. A $1 increase in natural gas might translate into a multi-percentage point gain for EQT's stock. The market is constantly trying to balance high domestic production with growing LNG export demand. So any sudden spike in domestic use from a cold snap can really move the needle. Traders see a cold forecast and they buy EQT as a direct bet on it.
Okay, let's move to a completely different but equally volatile macro play, crypto.
Right. The digital asset space saw a rebound. Bitcoin in particular moved up and broke through some key price levels.
And when Bitcoin moves, it tends to pull the whole ecosystem with it.
It does. It signals renewed optimism. And crucially, it drives trading volume. And that brings us to the stock that often acts as a proxy for the entire space. Coinbase. Ticker C-O-I-N.
Coinbase, the exchange, their business is directly tied to people buying and selling crypto.
Fundamentally, yes. A large part of their revenue comes from transaction fees. So when Bitcoin is rallying and people are getting excited, trading volumes spike. More volume means more fees, which means a better revenue outlook for Coinbase.
So for a trader who wants exposure to a crypto rally but doesn't want to buy Bitcoin directly, COIN is the go-to stock.
It's a very common high beta proxy. Just like EQT for natural gas, Coinbase is for the crypto market. You buy it because you expect an amplified return relative to the underlying asset. These are the kinds of names that do well in fast-moving, short-term, focused trading environments.
So to sum up the winners, capital was flowing into potential. The potential of a new supply chain for Intel, the forced potential of index buying for SanDisk, and the potential of short-term macro swings for EQT and Coinbase.
A very good way to put it. Which, of course, means we need to look at the other side of the ledger. Where did the capital come from? And that brings us to the losers. This is all about taking profits and asking hard questions about valuation.
This is the necessary counterbalance, isn't it? For money to flow in somewhere, it often has to flow out from somewhere else, especially on a day like that.
And it flowed out of the most successful and arguably the most crowded trades of the year. It was profit-taking, plain and simple.
The most prominent example was in the pharma space, specifically around the blockbuster weight loss drugs.
That's right. Eli Lilly, ticker LLY, saw a pretty clear pullback. And it's important to stress, this wasn't because of any bad news about their drugs.
It was because of the good news. The stock had just run up so much.
Exactly. It was a victim of its own success. The stock had been on an absolutely incredible multi-month rally, driven by this massive wave of optimism around its obesity treatments.
And when a stock goes nearly vertical like that, it becomes a target for profit-taking. What was the valuation context here?
Well, the company's market cap was pushing up towards the $1 trillion mark, a truly massive number. And to get there so quickly, it means the stock price was already reflecting years and years of future potential earnings.
All the good news was already baked into the price.
To a large extent, yes. So for any investor who got in months or even a year ago, they were sitting on enormous gains. A quiet, shortened trading session is a perfect time for them to, you know, de-risk a little and lock some of that profit in.
And like we saw with the winners, selling in one big name tends to affect the whole group. You called it the GLP-1 basket.
Yes. The market doesn't look at these stocks in isolation. Eli Lilly's main competitor is Novo Nordisk, ticker NVO. They are the two titans of this new class of drugs.
And they trade as a pair.
Very much so. So when a big fund decides, okay, LLY's valuation is a bit stretched for now, and they sell, that sentiment spills over.
How does that happen? Does the same fund just sell Novo Nordisk as well?
Sometimes, yes. It's portfolio management. They might be trimming their exposure to the entire weight loss drug theme. But it's also just perception. The capital leaving Eli Lilly sends a signal that maybe this sector has gotten a little too hot, a little too expensive in the short term. And so Novo Nordisk, which has also had a great run, gets pulled down too as others follow that lead.
Okay, so that's profit taking in a pharma giant. Let's talk about the tech story of the year, AI chips. They were also prime targets.
It's a very similar story, just in a different sector. We saw NVIDIA, ticker NVDA, pull back. And when NVIDIA pulls back, it almost always puts pressure on its closest competitor, Advanced Micro Devices, ticker AMD.
NVIDIA has just been the poster child for the entire AI boom. If the demand story for AI is still so strong, why would people sell now?
It's that same principle of valuation and just, you know, the law of gravity for stocks. Nothing goes up in a straight line forever. After the kind of year NVIDIA's had, the growth priced in is just astronomical.
They're priced for perfection.
Beyond perfection. The stock price isn't just reflecting next year's earnings. It's reflecting earnings many years into the future. That makes the stock very vulnerable to even the slightest hint of uncertainty.
But is there any real uncertainty? The demand from cloud providers seems unstoppable.
Well, two things were weighing on traders' minds. First is just that valuation question. Can any company grow fast enough for long enough to justify this price? But the second is the competitive landscape.
You mean AMD catching up?
That's part of it. But the bigger, longer-term question is about NVIDIA's own customers. The big cloud companies, your Googles, Amazons, Microsofts.
What about them? They're buying all the chips.
They are. But they're also spending billions of dollars to design their own custom AI chips in-house. They don't want to be dependent on NVIDIA forever.
Ah, so your biggest customers are also working to become your biggest competitors.
Exactly. And the market is forward-looking. So even though NVIDIA is dominant today, the knowledge that its biggest clients are actively trying to find alternatives creates a long-term headwind. That combination, a stretched valuation and future competitive threats, makes it a very easy choice for profit-taking on a slow day.
And that selling in NVIDIA just naturally drags AMD down with it.
It does. They're seen as so closely correlated in the AI space that it's very hard for AMD to rally when NVIDIA's weak.
This caution about the future wasn't just limited to the hardware, the chips. It was also visible in the software side of AI.
That's a key transition. We've talked about the hardware guys like NVIDIA, where the revenue is very real and happening right now. For enterprise software, the question is different. It's about how quickly they can turn AI features into actual money.
Let's use Oracle as an example, ticker ORCL. It was down. What was the specific concern there?
The concern was about the timeline. Oracle has invested a ton in its cloud services and integrating AI. The market is now getting a little impatient. They want to see proof that customers are paying more because of these new AI tools.
I want to see it in the revenue numbers.
Right. It's one thing to announce a new AI feature. It's another thing to show that it's leading to accelerated revenue growth. The enterprise sales cycle can be slow, and if it takes longer than expected for these AI initiatives to start generating real premium revenue, traders get nervous.
And that nervousness wasn't just about Oracle. It seemed to apply to the whole enterprise software space, including Salesforce, ticker CRM.
Yes, Salesforce is in the same boat. They're a leader in their space, CRM, and they're also weaving generative AI into everything they do. But they face the exact same scrutiny from the market.
Are customers actually upgrading their plans? Are they paying more specifically for the AI functionality?
Those are the billion-dollar questions. If the early signs suggest that AI is a nice feature, but not something that's dramatically boosting the average revenue per user right away, then a general caution settles over the whole group.
So the market is making a distinction. It's distinguishing between the AI hype in a press release and the AI revenue in a quarterly report.
Perfectly said. Until that financial proof becomes clear and undeniable, capital's going to be cautious. It would rather rotate into a more immediate story, even a speculative one like the Intel rumor, then wait around for the software monetization to happen.
It really was a fascinating session, a sort of rapid-fire test of where the market's conviction was strongest and where it was starting to waver.
That really sums it up. The capital rotation on that Black Friday session was decisive. You had this stark contrast between gains in a name like Intel, driven by a very specific rumor, and this clear pullback in the proven market leaders like Eli Lilly and NVIDIA.
It was all about rebalancing. The market rewarded a story that seemed to validate a long-term strategic change, Intel's foundry ambitions, while at the same time, it cashed in its chips on stocks whose valuations had been pushed to the absolute limit by a year of success.
So a final thought for you to think about here is this. What does it say about the market's mindset, especially during these quiet periods when it shows so much enthusiasm for an unconfirmed rumor at Intel, while at the same time applying selling pressure to proven winners like the AI and pharma leaders?
It shows that tension, doesn't it? The tension between betting on what could happen versus dealing with the reality of what something is worth right now.
It's that constant balancing act between anticipating the future and confronting the ceilings of the present.
A great perspective to end on.
Before we sign off, just a reminder. This content is for informational purposes only. This is not financial advice or buy or sell recommendations. This is purely the opinion of the author.
Join us next time for more breaking news to trading moves.